It certainly will. It's a little bit early to understand exactly what the total impact will be, but I'm hoping that what it will do will emphasize and bring to the forefront what has been a major element in the entire information sharing effort over the years, and that is the balancing of information access with information security.
Yeah.
Not easily done, and it has to be continually monitored and updated, because part of the problem was that the CIPRNet was somewhat out of date in that respect.
I want you to explain, because not everyone follows the information sharing environment and what it is as much, but it, as far as I know, and having you seen you speak a couple times, the goal always was the right information to the right people at the right time.
That's right. And those three elements, if you break them down further, means that only the information needed by that individual to conduct their job, to get their job done, was to flow to that individual and other information to other individuals depending upon their jobs. Information sharing never envisaged a blanket application of information access where there were not control mechanisms in place to ensure that the information was flowing properly. Not only does it mean that the right information flows to the right individual at the right time, but the right amount of information. Mm-hmm. One of the obvious mistakes in the control system was that huge volumes of information, what are generally referred to as mass data downloads, were not being monitored. And this would have shown up in a fully developed information sharing environment, would have shown up as an anomaly. And anomalies generally get checked, or should be always checked, and that was kind of missing.
You said in an effective information sharing environment. Talk a little bit about what you were working on, what is still being worked on, the information sharing environment. Explain to people what this is.
Well, an information sharing environment is nothing more than a new way of managing information to take account of the information revolution that occurred in the 1990s. The best example of it is your credit card. When you use your credit card, you, the individual, get a certain amount of information that enables you to use the credit card. You don't get any more information than you need to use the credit card. The fellow at the store where you use the credit card only gets the information that he or she needs to function in their capacity. The bank that the credit card is operating from gets information that it needs to fulfill its. And if you take that all the way through the international transfers that are needed when you use your credit card in, say, New Delhi or Johannesburg, all of those elements, they only get the information they need to conduct their operations. Nobody gets all of the information, and no one has generalized access to the system. It also has what's known as immutable audit. That is to say, every transaction within the information environment is immutably recorded and can be audited at any time to check on anomalies, to check on, to verify that that transactions occurred and that they were handled properly. Now, we haven't gotten that far as we set up this new information environment in the federal government, but we're getting there. And until we get there, we're going to be, we'll have problems with information sharing. And one of the problems, although this I would insist is not primarily an information sharing problem, this is an espionage problem.
Mm.
In fact, the parallels with the Robert Hansen and Alder James cases are really quite striking. And at the end of the Robert Hansen, to just cite one of the two cases, no one said...
These are Alder James being a CIA agent, Hansen being an FBI agent, that essentially, they sold things, secrets.
They stole information. Take the Hansen case. They took information out of the system in rather massive quantities, not quite as massive as the WikiLeaks case. But it was the same type of excessive download uploading of information from within the FBI system, and then basically giving that to an adversary who Hansen did his thing, Alder James did his, and there was no sense that well, we ought to shut the FBI or we ought to shut down information within the system. What they did was, what the FBI did was, it put into practice many of the controls I've been talking about at the level, in the case of Robert Hansen, that was available at the time. But even those controls need to be updated.
And I know part of this, there's a gentleman, young man, who's accused of handing over, I guess, most of these. I guess it's a little bit unusual that any one person would have access to this much information.
Yes, although what happened in this case, assuming this fellow was the only leaker, which is not necessarily a confirmed situation at this point, the individual was an intelligence analyst working out in the field, meaning in this case Iraq. And the control mechanisms out there are substantially less than they are back in Washington and within, say, the military structure in the U.S. and in Western Europe. And therefore, there were basically looser security controls out there in the field in Iraq and in Afghanistan. The intention and the explanation for that by the Department of Defense is that the warfighter needs access to related information. Well, they're now going to be putting into, they've already announced that they are putting into practice some control mechanisms out there that were not being used before, and that they expect that these control mechanisms will make it much more difficult for someone to use the CIPRNet, which is the secret level, by the way. In this case, you have to make a distinction that Alder James and Hansen both had access to the highest, most sensitive, most tightly controlled information in the U.S. government. The CIPRNet only handles up to secret and general distribution secret. Special category secret and higher than that were not available to the whoever was doing the leaking.
Two last questions, and then I'll let you go. One is, as I've been reading through some of this data, some of this information, as media reports have reported on it, some of it is almost, I guess, a little bit surprising that, hold on, why is that secret? And I've seen a number of reports, people saying, hold on, is part of the problem here, it's hard to secure everything, and what ends up happening is nothing ends up being secure. Is that part of the issue we're seeing here?
Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. Let me try and explain it briefly, and that is, just because something is on, let's say, CIPRNet, doesn't mean it's secret. It means that you can put controlled information and even unclassified information onto that net in order to transmit it with security to another location. Even though it may be confidential, it may be just a CUI, the controlled but unclassified information, it could be unclassified, but this is the only network that you have to move the information rapidly and securely to the other end or individual or area where you wish the information to be gotten to. So not everything on CIPRNet, not everything that was put out in these files is secret. Some of it is probably not even classified.
Hmm.
What you do on a network is you use the network to move the information. The controls on that information are determined by that particular piece of information's designation: secret, confidential, limited official use, or CUI, or unclassified, for example. Second point is, it's difficult to say that a piece of information that is classified, whatever level, is necessarily sensitive, just the content. As we're finding out, there's an awful lot of stuff which really isn't all that sensitive except that it was said by, say, the prime minister of somewhere, or the president, or a government official,
right,
with the expectation that confidence would be maintained. And the fact that it's been leaked means that that individual and other individuals are going to think twice, three times, maybe 10 times before they give any information the next time around. They're not necessarily going to say, oh, well, that really wasn't all that sensitive, or it was just scuttlebutt, or it was just an opinion that had no real importance. They're going to say, the system didn't control the information, and the next time when I really want to give some important information, I'm going to think very, very carefully before I say something. That's what the State Department is really concerned about, and I think it's a legitimate concern. I'm not saying that much of what was leaked was not serious information. I'm just saying that whether or not you think it ought to have been classified, the problem will still exist, that the sources will dry up, and the real good information may, in fact, not be available simply because somebody was doubtful that the networks, that the U.S. government was, in effect, able to control their information.
Yeah, but part of the concern I've heard is that what the result of this will be, pushing back of sharing of information of any kind.
Well, that's always a danger. I hope it doesn't happen. Let's go back to my first statement, and that is that it's a balance between access and security. And that is always the case, no matter whether you do this by computers or whether you do it in hard copy or whether you do it just hand-to-hand, that when, in fact, there is a balance between the security and the access, you have confidence in the system. Part of the problem here is not only foreign leaders and foreign government officials, but people in the U.S. government are going to be wondering, should I put this information into the system or should I not? Because I think it's sensitive, I think it's important, I think it ought to be highly classified, but do I have confidence that the information sharing networks are going to handle this stuff in a secure manner? You don't get information sharing unless the individuals inside the system are confident that it will be managed in the proper way. And I think the greatest danger here is, and we've already seen sort of indications of that, where people at the State Department are saying, you know, well, ambassadors out there in the field, and I was one of those, are going to be very, very careful about what information they put into the system, because they don't want their sources to be burned.
So what should agencies be doing at this point?
Well, I think the lessons to be drawn from this is that the networks, several. One is, to be quite frank, we've been very much interested in moving towards information sharing. Good basic new policies that need to be put into place and are being put in place. What we haven't done is we haven't matched that interest and that desire for the information sharing with the proper amount of resource allocation to information sharing. Quite frankly, I spent 3 years as a program manager for information in the information environment, and almost all of what was done to increase the flows of information and to establish these new information sharing mechanisms was done with no additional resource allocation to the people who were asked to do it.
Yeah.
It was another case of do more with the same amount. And when that happens, you run into things. CIPRNet, I'll give you a very concrete example. CIPRNet, when asked to put state, local officials into the CIPRNet, in other words, law enforcement officials, Homeland Security officials, governors, etc., said, we can only do it if we put special control mechanisms in place for them, because we want them not to have access to Department of Defense information unless we want them to have that. And they did put in control mechanisms, and now some, very limited numbers, have access to the CIPRNet. at the state and local level. However, the price of doing that was relatively slight as compared with the price of doing the same thing for all of the Department of Defense personnel who were in had access to CIPRNet. Because the problem there is that there are, I understand from GAO reports, that there are over 3 million users of the CIPRNet. Almost all of them are military, civilian, and contract employees of Department of Defense. While there were resources to put these control mechanisms for the very few hundreds of state and local individuals that were being allowed into CIPRNet, there was never enough resources to make the system work for 3+ million users. Why? Because there wasn't an allocation of resources that was sufficient to do the job. So the job didn't get done. Now it's going to get done because we had this crisis, the WikiLeaks.